Hey, optimists. I found myself thinking recently what an amazing time it is to be alive, with all the opportunity for innovation that emerging technology combined with human ingenuity and social conscience offers us right now. Earlier this year, I was privileged to be invited to become an ambassador for a blockchain venture and a platform that is a game changer for charitable fundraising and volunteering. That platform is Investors in Community. I was even more fortunate when one of the founders, Dave Clarkson, agreed to be a guest on this podcast. We had a really uplifting and enlightening discussion, and anyone who has worked with good causes to raise money or support will find Dave's thoughts in this episode incredibly interesting. So, let's get into it. And don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast in your favourite podcast app. Cheers. Welcome to episode 5 of the Chief Executive Optimist podcast, delivering resilience recipes for leaders and high performers and helping you to preserve your sanity and humanity in this time of relentless change. I'm Gareth Hawkins, scale-up investor, principal consultant and coach at Enterprise Insights in London. So today I'm delighted to be speaking to Dave Clarkson. Dave's a director of Investors in Community and a co-founder of the Family Business Network. These are two exciting peer-to-peer networks that are innovating and making a positive impact in the field of socially responsible business. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Gareth. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Dave, regular listeners to this show will know that we typically try to start our episodes with something that has grabbed our attention in recent weeks, be that a show, a business, a concept, a book. So not to put you on the spot, but what's in your thought space right now?
Well, I am an avid book reader. I eat books up constantly. Leonardo da Vinci, in terms of somebody who had ideas on everything, he was the most talented individual. And I've studied a lot of work around mastery. And he was somebody I was really looking forward to finding out all about because of what he's done. He was the originator of blue sky thinking, for instance, that term that we all use in our business world now. But actually, that's going back to the 15th century. He coined it.
He was the original polymath, I think, wasn't he? The man that was into everything, including designing helicopters to get us into that blue sky.
Well, just about everything. You know, he was it was one of those things that he was talented, he was a great artist, a musician, apparently incredibly good looking. He could do anything he wanted. He was just one of those individuals that you probably would have disliked at the time. It's like, why have you got everything? However, he was really well known for actually not completing on virtually every project he ever did. Even to the fact of our lovely Mona Lisa was never actually handed back.
Yes, the perpetual plague of the perfectionist, unfortunately, that jobs are often started, but it needs someone else to bring them over the finish line.
This whole discussion now about the UK, a country that is a generator of ideas, you know, we used to be all across the world. Now we've kind of regrouped, but fundamentally, we are still the greatest at ideas. It was said that 85% of all ideas were generated out of the UK originally. Now, from that, we were talking about Britain, if you like, as a nation, but we're coining it more as an ideation. So one thing that we are going to be able to sort of get back and drive forward on is our ideas and developing and our creativity, which I will come on to, actually, I think, throughout this interview with a number of the organisations and businesses that we're involved with.
Just to your point about Britain, from a nation to an ideation, I think that's absolutely fascinating, and I really want to take that a bit further. It goes to the fact that probably when we were originally the foundry of ideas for the world, we were the workshop of the world. That was the phrase around the Industrial Revolution that I think was synonymous with Britain. And we went from being the workshop of the world to ultimately being the warehouse of the world as we offshored a lot of our manufacturing. And I worked in that space for quite some time and saw that trend firsthand. But it's definitely true that the tertiary and quaternary sectors now are driving our economy. And that's where a lot of the investment is coming into the UK, is in those spin-outs of university, those PhD programs where research is key. And, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did with the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine if we didn't have the culture that we have now in investing in that quaternary sector and having ideas come out at pace, at speed into the business world?
There is a lot of it. I mean, we are connected with both from my ISE aspect and also Family Business Network. We work very closely with the universities. Like I said, they're a rich source. And there we are again, you know, we are leading the way in terms of, you know, such a small part of this world, but actually, again, just showing people how it can be done.
And now we've led on the delivery as well as on the innovation. We need to lead on the collaboration around COVAX and supporting the giving of vaccines to those less fortunate nations. So, Dave, it's a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for sharing that insight. For the benefit of the listeners who may not necessarily be aware of the Family Business Network and Investors in Community, maybe you could give us a little whistle stop of your career, if you like, to date. What brought you to this this pass?
Okay. So, very quick backstory. My origins are creative industry originally. I came out of education. I could draw and I could play instruments. I was a creative mind. So how could I earn money from either playing an instrument or drawing? And that was the whole world of the origins of graphic design and so on. So I went into the advertising world. Then from advertising, classically burnt out very, very early on after 6 years of just idea generation. That's where the theme goes back to again. From there, I stepped out, and then a friend was looking to grow and develop a marketing business. And I thought, I've never run a marketing business. I don't know how to grow a business, actually. I'll give it a go. So we grew the marketing business over 9.5 years, tipped over just around about 4.2 million, all doing incredibly well. But then from that point, business lesson is very much that I didn't really have a piece of the pie. I was not a shareholder. And a lesson there where I thought I was getting part of it, and the guys in London said, no, we were never going to give you that. So at that point, I thought, I've grown a business on your behalf. I'll step out. So I stepped out and went into the world of presenting. I used to do a lot of events, just all sorts of different presenting work behind the scenes. But I still loved marketing, brand, developing businesses. So I then bought into a brand consultancy. So from the brand consultancy, that then took us to the crash, the financial crash, 2008. Yeah, and my biggest clients were banks, professional service firms in particular, who all literally regrouped. So we stepped out from that, and I joined an accountancy group to develop, one, the business, but also to work with all of the clients. So I'd gone from a creative world into very much a business development world, and spent many years within the accountancy world developing businesses, and then finally finished in the corporate world with law firm for a couple of years. And it's at that point I wanted to step out. I'd had enough of creative and corporate world and needed to move then into something different. What I'd been doing behind the scenes is, when I was with the accountancy world, a lot of their clients were family businesses. So this is something I wanted to study, because if I need to understand something, I really need to understand it. I have to go down and, you know, it's not just read the books, it's go out and find there's a professor of family business. So I got to know the professor. We shared a lot of material. We started doing a little tour around, talking about family businesses and their nuances. And that's something I developed with my co-partner, Sue Howarth, as well. So together back in 2014, we're doing that behind the scenes, developing a network. But then the other side of it was also then a good friend of mine, Phil Webb. We've 20 plus years backwards and forwards knowing each other. He actually originates out of IBM himself back in the day. But we'd always met and had a lunch, as you do with friends every 6 months, saying, we're going to work together. But I don't know on what. We knew we were going to finally work together. And just a couple of years ago, when we were having our lunch, he said, I've got this idea, and it's all based on community credits. So I said, I love the idea, the concept of what you're developing. And so he talked to me more about Investors in Community. 80% of all private sector family, or private sector businesses out there, are family owned or influenced. So you can say the vast majority of businesses out there are family owned. What they're incredibly good at is giving back, what they're incredibly good at. They have their sense of purpose. They know what they're doing within their communities. This is what Investors in Community came along to help out and support. And we'll go into that in more detail, I know, shortly. Everything right now, it's the stars align. Everything I've ever done has got me to this point that what I want to do is give back.
Yeah, it sounds like your entire career has led you to this moment where your purpose has been to drive these two businesses, and how rewarding it must be to see the impacts that they're having. So, I want to come on to family businesses because they're close to my heart, but I'd like to start with the end in mind, if you like, which is your more recent business, the Investors in Community platform, which has been live since 2019. Is that right?
Yeah, we launched the end of February 2019 at IBM's offices in London. Mm-hmm. Just before something broke out.
Yes, that little thing that we have called COVID. Yes, but certainly, you know, even with that context, the traction that IIC has been gaining has been exponential, I think, since its start. So it's obviously touched a nerve and met a need, a market need. But it may not yet be on the radar for some of our listeners. So maybe you could give a bit of an outline of what IIC does and what it provides.
Yeah, sure. So Investors in Community, this is something that businesses have always been involved with, you know, the giving back, charity, donations. I was the same within the corporate world. It's something that we felt that we should do. It's appropriate to do. It was not really a coordinated sort of idea within an organization. It was people were doing fundraising, people were doing donating, people were doing volunteering, etc. But it wasn't really coordinated, tracked. So it was never a joined up process. And the other side of that is the whole kind of tracking, verification, measurement, and importantly, the impact. So we'd always do that fundraising and we'd always do that support through letting some of our team go out and do their volunteering. But we never really reached a point where, well, what is it? What did that money actually go on to do? And it was often, well, I don't know. We just give to charity or we give time to charity. That needed sort of tightening up, really. So what we were looking at is from a business perspective with Investors in Community, this was about, imagine being able to coordinate through a dashboard on a platform, visibly on screen, you can see all your activity, everything that we're involved with charity-wise, in terms of community project-wise, and also how are we supporting? Because one of the beauties of the platform, and it is still unique to our Investors in Community, it's the only platform that provides the five ways of giving to be measured. Donating, fundraising, volunteering, skilled volunteering, or some would also call it pro bono, and gift in kind. So there's five actual ways people can give and also be measured, have it verified by who you're doing this with for the charity, and also importantly, have an impact statement. Now that is far more powerful now than before the statement of we've given X amount to charity every year. Well, that's kind of nice, but wouldn't it be nice to go, we've given X amount of time and money for these projects, which has created this level of impact. There's a real story told about what I'm putting back into my communities.
If you were to distill down the mission behind Investors in Community, and obviously it's got quite the eponymous title, I mean, the answer's in the question to some extent, investing in the community. But if you were to distill down into an elevator pitch what Investors in Community seeks to do, how would you summarize?
Right. Fundamentally, this is all about being able to measure human social value overall. That's the big idea, human social value, that everybody can actually be through the platform giving, supporting in some way. You know, if it's not financial, it can actually be through time. If it's not through time, it's through physical gifts. Everybody is able to do something. And that's really the part of it, to facilitate the improvement, really, of the lives of people and communities.
Yeah, love that. I mean, that is very, very tangible. And often businesses want to engage positively with their corporate social responsibility, CSR kind of obligations, but sometimes they don't know where to start. Also, whilst it might begin in an altruistic sense where they want to give, after a time, after a fashion, they'd like to track They'd like to know what that giving is resulting in to some extent. And even if they don't necessarily have that intention at the outset, somewhere along the line, perhaps for an internal justification or to motivate their people behind that activity, they'd like to know what it's leading to. And I think for the first time with IIC, that is now available. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, so there's 168,000 registered charities and community projects in the UK. And that doesn't include Scotland at this point, but this is kind of growing and developing all the time. So more and more registered charities, because society has created this need. So they're all there. And right now we have a situation where the largest of corporate charities out there right now, they get the largest proportion of financial support. Because they are great marketing machines. They are, as we define them, they are some of the largest organizations we've got out there. So they're getting the lion's share of money out there. Meanwhile, the rest of the UK, there's some fantastic community projects and localized charities that are doing great work, which aren't getting on the radar. So part of that with investing in community is to level up the playing field for all of them. So everybody can go on there. They provide projects on there and they can break down all the individual items that they're looking for. So it's no longer we're a charity and we want £1 million or half a million or even £500. It's breaking it down into we're a charity. This is what we do. This is something specifically that we're after. And this is how it'll impact the people we're supporting or the particular initiative they're supporting. Now that creates something much more tangible for an organization, for a business to get its head round of how it can give locally. But wouldn't it be good to actually identify what's in your localized area? Because most of your workforce is employed locally. So surely you would actually help out and support locally.
Just diving into that point about the number of charities in the UK, or particularly England, Wales, Northern Ireland, 168,000 charities. It astounded me when you mentioned to me in a previous conversation before this pod that 70% of the corporations that are regularly giving to charities are actually giving to just 0.5%. That blows my mind.
70% of all the corporate giving, so I'm not talking about personal individuals, I'm talking about the corporate giving, and this has gone on back since the 80s, that this is transferred across to the largest corporate charities out there. Now, again, I'm not saying it's not a case of, well, they shouldn't have that. I'm just saying we need to somehow spread that money across and support some of the other areas. So 0.5%, because you literally, if you take the top 100 charities, there's a great old list there, but it soon drops down into those charities that they could actually run and survive and do some incredible work on £20,000 a year, but they just can't get on the radar to anybody.
So that visibility piece, first and foremost, IIC does a number of things really well and meets a number of unmet needs. But for me, first and foremost, giving equal visibility to all the different charities, be they national, international, local, be they large or small, putting those in front of potentially their local businesses that could be giving in one of the five ways, is a really important task that perhaps hasn't been done up to this point. On the company side, how keen have companies been to sign up to the platform, and what sort of feedback have you had for them? What kind of results have they been getting?
Okay. So bearing in mind, obviously, when we launched to great fanfare at the time, back in that February 2020, it was like, okay, let's open the doors. It was a very small trickle of businesses coming through. What was happening was we were gaining all of the charities behind the scenes. They were all naturally coming on board and building up. Businesses took a little bit of time, and right throughout probably the first 12 months of COVID, it was obviously the last thing on their mind. Because they were talking about getting their businesses sorted out. They were talking about getting their employees safe and secure in their homes. Now things are settling down a little bit more, so they can start to turn their attention more back to actually supporting giving and the communities. And the one thing, there are a number of positives through COVID. I always pause when I say that, but there are. And one thing from that is there's been a real focus in on communities. And so what we've actually got throughout the last 12, 14 months is the fact that businesses have actually identified more local needs and support that is required of its communities. So actually, it's now easier to engage with those businesses, and they're now starting to register and create their projects on the platform, working alongside the charities.
So IIC uses a really innovative means of demonstrating that human social value that you speak of, and to giving companies a tangible means by which to demonstrate the five ways of giving that they're involved in and measure the work and the activity that they're doing. So these, I think you call community credits. How do they work, Dave?
So what we've got here is a token that is for every pound given, there is one community credit. For every volunteering hour, there are 10 community credits. So general volunteering would be any of us going out and helping, driving around, delivering groceries to somebody, supporting, helping out in a garden, the classic kind of CSR kind of level of a team from a business going out, giving their general physical help to something. The skilled volunteering would be very much come down to, i.e. it could be a carpenter, an electrician, an accountant, a lawyer, actually providing their skill sets. Because as we all know, a number of these services, I mean, they're pretty expensive by hour. So for a charity to have the help and support of an accountant or a solicitor, or the emergency requirement of an electrician to be given in that way, that has huge value to them. What that then does for the business, it's then actually putting together a value so they can actually present out, we've got X amount of community credits, 1,000 community credits, and how it's made up from gifting, from donating, from supporting through time. So it's a verification, if you like.
Got it. I like the way that you've given that that set of values, that set of measurable activities, some commonality in one particular token that can aggregate up all of the, not just giving of money and not just giving of time, but also giving of professional trade or skill is tremendous. And that's revolutionary in itself. Now, I mentioned revolutionary, and I don't use that word lightly, but something that IIC does is to store all of this in a distributed ledger on the blockchain. And I believe it's the IBM blockchain that you guys use to store the CSR activity. Why did you choose the IBM blockchain?
Okay. Well, first of all, in terms of developing something, we needed something to be very secure. We wanted something that is irreversible, if you like. It had to be something that could be tracked and verified. So blockchain just seemed to be the right choice for us. Now, IBM themselves have put themselves out very much as a tech for good business, and we were drawn to them for those reasons. Our whole kind of purpose and what we're about, they were already aligned with that. This is something that they already do. And I believe this is the first time blockchain's been used in this way.
Yes, I would say so in terms of firsts. And by the way, re-IBM, I mean, you couldn't think of a stronger, better established IT partner to get involved in with this. So, excellent selection.
But just thinking about the bigger picture on it as well, Gareth, because it's sort of, what we're doing here, we started off with, this will be on a global scale. From day one, we knew this is global. This is not just about the UK. So from the very beginning, somebody like that, they are a global operation.
Most certainly. And going into a distributed ledger, going into a blockchain, a digital record, it's very nature, it's international. And by its very nature, it's also transparent. And that plays in really well to the spirit of the CSR and the fact that you'd want there to be, as you say, an immutable, transparent record. Now, community credits, I think, are the first tokenized social asset that I've ever seen on a blockchain. And I would defy anybody to come up with a precedent prior to community credits. So now currently the community credits are non-fungible. Do you see them becoming fungible in the future? And if so, how do you see that happening?
Yeah, so where we are at the moment, obviously certainly for the businesses, the community credits is a value that they can put together, whether on their website, their tendering processes, etc., as a badge of honour. But taking this forward and looking at it, the community credits, this is about, when I talk about human social value, this is the fact that everybody can get involved in this. So it's not just about the business, it's individuals. It's, by the way, it's free for all individuals as well as the charities. I've probably not mentioned that so far. So individuals themselves can be on that platform. Every single person can have community credits. Now, the beauty of all of this is that we talk about donations, we talk about gift in kind, we talk about just time given. The whole aim of this, we're looking forward to actually making community credits something that is transferable. So if we can actually make this almost like a transactional currency. So for every hour of good that I give, in turn, if I can qualify, because I can verify through the Investors in Community platform that I have given this time, it has been verified by the charity, therefore I have X amount of community credit tokens that give me a human social value. Now, looking at that going forward is how could that then be transferable for other goods?
Do you see that as a discount off of goods or services in a retailer sense?
It's entering into sort of almost like the voucher economy. Just by giving, there is something in it for you. Just by that little bit of extra giving, that bit of support, helping somebody locally, you will have that community credit value put to you. Now that becomes something much more powerful. It's an influencer. It's giving back into the community and it's giving back to the individual something that they can benefit from.
And it's another way for businesses to engage with CSR almost in a sort of secondary market sense, because if they are recognizing community credits and they are attaching through a voucher economy some kind of value to them, then they are donating to some extent to those fundraisers or volunteers who are involved in delivering the CSR. Yeah, it's a really incredible thing that you guys have come up with here, because community credits, you know, just as a cryptocurrency is mined through processor power, community credits are produced through the power of charity, the power of human social value, which is incredible in itself. But then to have that somehow become fungible, either through a discount or being recognized as a fungible token in the fullness of time, could be, you know, quite a world-changing thing, not just in a Western economy, but as you say, more internationally, out into the developing world. So really exciting.
So we reference it always as leveling up. This is about leveling up society, that everybody can give some level of support. Some don't want anything back from it. But of course, we know part of society actually does.
Yes. And I think it's very, very on trend, because leveling up is obviously what the UK is focusing on coming out of COVID. It's about hopefully trying to rebalance some of those things and do that through finding a purpose for everyone. And I think, you know, everybody at some point in their life does look for a purpose from their life. And if that, what greater purpose can there be than putting our strengths, our efforts into helping others?
Let's not just talk about it financially. Let's talk about it in actually just individuals giving. And giving, yes, monetary, but giving time or giving physical things. If everybody who is giving something back, then that changes everything for all the charities and community projects out there.
I completely agree. So how do people find out more about Investors in Community, Dave?
Okay, well, they can do this by going to the website, so investorsincommunity.org. Then they can request a demonstration. They can just register. They can, just going on there, they can see the projects that are on there already. They can see which charities are there already. And we welcome everybody to it.
And it's free. It's free for anyone to register, be it an individual, a company, or a charity. Is that right?
Yeah. So the charity itself can register, because all we're saying then is it's giving your intent to say, look, we're getting behind this. So for the businesses, they can register for free. But what we do from that side is obviously to actually manage this behind the scenes. Then for every employee then that subscribes. So if you like, the scenario would be for the business, it would pay for a subscription for X amount of their employees to be part of the platform. And that's £10 per employee per year.
Tremendously good value.
I would actually just say it's a benefit in kind to all the employees. Now, what that gives them is their own profile on there, relevant to the business, where they can build their community credit scores with the business. But it also gives them a personal profile so they can build their own personal community credit value through their own support that they do and the runs at the weekend and all the different individual charity side of things.
And they carry that with them from employer to employer?
Absolutely. So when they move on, then their kind of personal community credit value, if you like, is for life. So they carry it with them where they go. If they can have this community, this human social value and evidenced, it's actually saying a lot more about you as an individual. So in terms of from a career perspective, it would really help you out.
I agree. Congratulations to everybody involved at IIC. I think it's a fantastic platform, a fantastic network. I'm pleased to be part of it as an ambassador, and I think it's got a fantastic future ahead. I want to just touch on something else that you mentioned in your intro, if you don't mind, which is your other network that you co-founded back in 2014, the Family Business Network. Now, you mentioned it, that family businesses account for over 80% of the total number of businesses in the UK economy. Actually, they contribute to over 20% of the UK's tax revenues, and they actually account for more than 25% of the total UK GDP, which is an important sector to have a voice. But ultimately, it's so fragmented by lots and lots of SMEs that it's difficult to effectively aggregate them. Whereas the corporations are, you know, of a sufficient size to be able to lobby and do things like that. Now, I ran a family business myself, which we ultimately sold and exited. And along the way, we acquired a number of family businesses that perhaps didn't have succession strategies of their own. So family businesses have been really close to my heart. But you guys at the Family Business Network, you champion the unsung heroes, really, that make up this massive sector in the UK economy. Just how has the Family Business Network come to be and progressed over the last 7 years of its life?
Well, probably right back at the beginning of the conversation, I was mentioning back in 2014, we formed the Family Business Network. We were just in the Cumbrian region in the UK at that time. And what we identified is that families like to talk to other families. If you're another family business, they loved to talk to another family business. They'd open up and share what they do because you've got to build up a lot of trust to get into a family business. So we started opening up insight days, if you like, you know, coming into the family business itself, opening up about what they do. So over time, we built up quite a following within the Cumbrian region. And then family businesses from out of area started to say, well, okay, we'd like to get involved. We'd like to talk to other families. We're going through a particular challenge right now. What other families do you have that are maybe going through something similar to us? So we went from just county-based, if you like, to regions, and then from regions into the UK. We actually then went worldwide in November last year and ran our first symposium, if you like, over 24 hours right across the world from Adelaide. We went across to America, all across through Europe, and then finished the following morning in Hong Kong. So a fantastic kind of introduction to family businesses right across the world, who all have the same things in common, but will approach it in a culturally different way. So the Family Business Network itself has become fundamentally a peer-to-peer learning network for all sorts of different scenarios, and it's knowledge transfer. So for those who've got something positive to help and support a family business with, we allow them, either through a partnership or to be introduced directly, to help those family businesses out.
Tremendous. So you're effectively connecting family businesses all over the UK and now, in fact, all over the world, because it is a pervasive sector that, as you say, is international and faces the same challenges. But you're enabling people to share in other people's experiences and innovate themselves and share those innovations with others.
It is. The thing about the family business is a business will run itself rationally, as in rational numbers. It'll look at the numbers and make decisions on it. Family businesses run on both rational and emotional. What they're in pursuit of forever is that balance between those two. But then you've got the generational side of the families, some working in the business, some not pulling the weight in the business, some not in the business whatsoever. How does that all kind of work and tie together? So there's all sorts of things going on. But yet, one thing they can do is we can identify another family that's been through that scenario and put them together and have a conversation.
And there's nothing stronger than speaking to others who have walked the walk themselves. no amount of consultants will replace that authentic experience of another family business that's been through exactly that. But you mentioned emotion. Emotion, I think, is it's the secret sauce. It's the differentiator between family business and corporations. Yes, it has its dark side, emotion overwhelming, but more often than not, it is the underlying current that drives the business towards its purpose, right? And that's the magic, I think, that the family business captures, and I guess something that the Family Business Network looks to exponentially get the value for everybody else.
Well, we do, because it's storytelling, really. That's a big mantra of ours, that it's about identifying people's stories. And there's no greater way. So through the conferences that we've run, through the different seminars and audience with events that we've run over time, it's about the businesses being there, telling their stories. This is not theory. This is not something out of the books. This is real life and the highs and lows. As every generation comes in, you'll see a spike of innovation. There is so much learning within those spikes that it's unpicking that and having that story told. So storytelling itself is a great way, and it's a reassurance to many businesses as well.
And that they're not doing it alone, because so many businesses, so many leaders within small businesses and family businesses of every size are concerned that they're facing this for the first time anyone has faced it. And they don't necessarily know where to go to contextualize the challenge that they're going through and discover that other people have overcome those challenges. Incredible network. How many family businesses does it have engaging with it now?
Where we are at present is we've just over 3,000 family businesses that we engage with. But to put that into context, there's around about 15,500 mid-sized family businesses in the UK. Obviously, to define from our perspective, because people say, well, how do you define a family business? So from our basis, it's you've got one member of the family plus one other, at least part-time employed. That is a family business. But obviously then that goes right the way up from there. To us, it's about two family siblings, if you like, working in some form together within their business.
And a mid-size, what's the threshold there?
The vast majority of the families out there are sort of around the sort of mid-size. We've got everything from 12 employees to 250 employees.
Great. Yeah, I can think of many I'm running out of fingers. So family businesses actually make up the heart of many communities, and they deliver vital and much-loved services and are often highly engaged in supporting social causes and displaying, real acts of altruism, albeit having limited means in comparison to corporations. But what sort of similarities or differences in activity and engagement and impact have you typically noticed between corporate multinationals and family businesses? I mean, are there distinguishing features or things that they're all doing the same in regards to their social value?
Well, the corporates out there, it's almost part of their strategy. It's identified as part of their, almost like their marketing and PR exercises. It's kind of ring-fenced as something that they have to be seen to be doing. Family businesses, because they're about employing from their communities, they've actively always been involved with their communities, supporting, giving people time off to go and develop things. It's something that they kind of go, well, we just do that. We've done that for the last 50 years. But we're saying, well, actually, do you know what? Now it's about being recognised for that, to actually present that. People would say, well, oh, we don't talk about it. It's just something that we do. It's actually becoming really important, because people are judging a business based on its social impact and what it's doing. So we do say to them now, talk about it. You must share what you're doing, because this forms part of the learning. Others want to know exactly how you're giving back and what you're doing and what impact do you have in your local economy.
Don't hide it under a bushel. So a perfect cross-pollination there between, the family businesses and what IIC seeks to do, and presenting a very much a level playing field for businesses of all sizes to get involved in the five ways of giving and to record and demonstrate the value of their activity. I'm sure there are many leaders of family businesses listening to this. How do they find out more about the Family Business Network?
So if they go to fambiznet.co.uk, then they'll find out all about the activity that we're currently doing. There's all sorts of films on there, you know, people sharing their stories. There's events that we're running. Obviously, some are online, but we're now getting to a point where we're going real time.
Wonderful. Dave, thank you. It's been a really uplifting and inspiring chat with you, and I really appreciate you giving up so much of your time today. I tend to like to leave our listeners with something memorable around a vision for the future. And I'd like you to join me, if you will, on a thought experiment and think forward to maybe 10 years' time and how you'd like to see the business world and the third sector and working practices in general in society evolve. What, in your mind's eye, might the perfect world of 10 years' time look like in that context?
At the moment, we have businesses and we have charities, if you like, as almost like a second citizen. It's always perceived as they are not in quite the same level. What I'd like to have is both businesses, the employees within the organisations, and charities and community projects on the same level working together. And that way, back to the levelling up, it helps everybody out in society. Because as I said earlier on, we are all going to need one of these charities or a number of these charities as the stages of our life move on. So we need to be able to make sure that they're sustainable. And the only way that that's going to happen is I can't have the charities perceived as being the poor relation to the businesses out there. So I'd like to see more people get involved and actually from that part with the charities actually perceived on an equal level to what they're giving back into their communities.
So sustainability through equality and mutual dependence and support.
Yes, absolutely. All the way.
Well, that plays in perfectly to the concept of a new covenant and you know, business and citizenship having a level playing field. And I buy in wholly to that future vision, and I'd love to help make that a reality. Dave, thank you very much for that. That's a very thought-provoking vision to leave us with. I'll look forward to catching up with you again in a few months' time and hearing how it's all going.
No, thank you, Gareth. No, I appreciate having the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. All the best. As you can tell, I'm a big fan of Dave's work and was thrilled to have him as a guest on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed discovering investors in community and will spread the word among the businesses and charities in your community. Meanwhile, I'm excited about our next pod, in which we'll be talking to Ian Windle, author of The Leadership Map, on the power of CEO peer advisory groups and what lessons Western businesses can learn from the leading companies in East Asia. If you'd like to join our discussion in a future episode, please reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter at GPG Hawkins, or you can email us on podcast@ceoptimist.com. And please remember, to be kept up to date with our future episodes, just click the subscribe button in your favourite podcast platform and they'll be delivered to you by the power of internet alchemy. So until next time, remember to live with intention, make choices based on your values, and not let the choices of other people define you.